Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, Stone Guardians, Stone Guardians, Crystal Keepers,
Crystal Keepers,
Gin Lovers of Rocktown,
Gin Lovers of Rocktown,
welcome to Girls of Rocktown.
Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome to There's Rock for That. I am your host, Mary Brown, and I'm coming to you live today from Amarillo, Texas. I hope all of you are having and enjoying a wonderful Saturday morning, afternoon, maybe evening, depending on where you are and where you're listening from. This show, like all of our Saturday shows, is brought to you by the Tarot Guild, the international organization for tarot lovers, students, and professional readers since 2004. Check it out by going to www.thetarotguild.com. And let's see what else. We are a live call-in show. I will be taking calls if you want to chat about the topics of the day, or if you want a free crystal mini reading, you can call in. That'll be during the second half of the show. The number to call is 714-816-4628. Again, that number is 714-816-4628. Be sure to press the number 1 on your dial pad if you want to be on the air and chat about the topics or get a free crystal mini reading. When you press number 1, that makes you show up on the switchboard, so I know that you want to be on the air. Otherwise, you can just listen without pressing 1. That's fine, too. And we also have a chat post if you want to chat with other listeners. We have a Facebook chat post. You can find that easily by going to psychictalk.net/chat. And you can even ask questions in there if you have a question but you don't want to call in or don't have your phone handy. That'll work too. I will be checking out the chat room periodically during the show to see if anybody has a question. All right. So I am pretty excited about today's show. We're going to be talking all about metals on the scale of 1 to metal. This is going to be very metal. And our crystal guest for today is hematite, one of my favorite go-to, gotta have it in your crystal toolbox, hematite. So I want to say at the start of this, when I talk about all about metals, I mean, this is by no means going to be an exhaustive looking at every single metal and its properties and everything, because look, you know, it's really extensive, the information out there about metals, and there's a good reason for that, you know, because this is something that goes way, way, way back to our ancient ancestors. And, you know, so far back that, you know, the first 7 planets that were recognized by the ancients, because they were the planets that, you know, visible to the naked eye, they were associated, each one is associated with a metal. Each metal is linked to it, so, and, you know, they have deities also that were associated with each of the 7 planets, so those deities, of course, are linked to the metals as well. And really, when you think about it, you know, those original 7 metals were the ones on which, you know, modern civilization was founded. So it is kind of a big deal. And metals are something that I don't think we always think about when we talk about crystals. Oftentimes, you know, a big part of working with crystals, or a way to work with crystals, or even for people that don't even think of things in those terms, is to wear jewelry. Well, jewelry, there's so many metals used in jewelry. And, Yeah, I think the average person, and myself included at times too, is like when you're looking for a piece of jewelry, it's like, well, do I want gold? Do I want silver? Do I want platinum? You know, what's going to look good with this? You know, what's really, you know, and some of us are even like, you know, really attached to certain metals. There's some people that, you know, you could say the human race has been attached to gold and silver since scanning, since, you know, the first piece of gold was found. You know, there's a lot of ideas and folklore and legends that go along with all of these different metals as well. So we're going to kind of do just like a kind of a light overview of looking into metals today, because really we would need hours upon hours in order to, you know, cover everything about them. But I hope that by the end of this show that you come away from it actually kind of, you know, having that in your consciousness, thinking about it when you're going to buy a piece of jewelry. What kind of metal do you want to be included in it? Do you want it set in silver? Do you want it set in gold? And also, you know, we're going to discuss some of the metaphysical properties associated with these metals. So you might even choose based on that. So when we pick a piece of crystal jewelry, the focus doesn't always have to be solely on the crystal itself, but also on, you know, the setting. You know, what other materials are being used with it. And, of course, I'm sure many of you are aware that, you know, metals are also something that has been used in magic since the ancients, really. And we're going to get into that a little more in depth when we talk about hematite. And you might be thinking, hematite? Hematite's not a metal. I don't have a house built out of hematite. No, but hematite is a form of iron oxide. So when we're talking about metals, we're not just talking about, you know, the ones that you find in its natural state, you know, of the 5-7 metals associated with the classic 7 planets. You know, there's 5 of them that can be found in their native states. That's gold, silver, copper, iron, mercury. Yeah, mercury is a metal, even though it's a liquid form. And the other 2, tin and lead, you know, have to be smelted from ore. So, you know, some interesting things. You know, if you're into, you know, going to museums and into archaeology and stuff, you'll find that so many sacred artifacts, like temple statues and singing bowls and stuff, are made up of a mixture, often of all 7 metals. Well, so that's something that's also interesting. Another interesting thing for my science nerds out there is that when you really, if you look at like the periodic table, you find that, you know, there's about 91 elements of the periodic table that are actually metals. So metals are really, really important besides, you know, the maybe utilitarian uses that we're used to seeing, like construction and you know, making things, you know, using them to build things. There's that, but there's also the metaphysical aspects of it too. So let's go ahead and talk about what are the 7 classic metals. And again, those are copper, gold, iron, lead, silver, tin, and mercury. Okay, and so, you know, what are the associations? So gold, as you might guess, is connected to the sun, you know, and also, of course, you know, Sunday, right? This is also connected to the day of the week. And it's connected to the crown chakra, you know. So I was talking to somebody who was like, well, wouldn't that be connected to the solar plexus? It's like, not really, you know, because those connections with the chakras actually go way back into the Vedic belief system. And so gold being kind of like the height of those those seven classical metals was connected with kind of the height of our chakra system, the crown chakra. And so what are some of the metaphysical and meanings associated with gold? Success, fame and fortune, manifestation, self-confidence, and connections with the divine, because again, it's connected with the crown chakra. And our next classic metal is silver, which many of you probably already know is connected with the moon, connected with Mondays because of that. It's got this feminine connection to it. It's thought of a feminine energy, just as the sun is thought of a masculine energy, which you see pretty often across the board. When you look at like deities that are associated with the moon, usually it's like a goddess, and there's a feminine connotation to it, just the same with solar masculine deities. Deities associated with the sun tend to be masculine. And the colors associated with silver, of course, are like white silver, you know, there's bluish silver. It's connected to the third eye chakra. So it's connected to intuition, memory, our inner wisdom, psychic work, dreams. Also thought to have a cooling effect, right? Because again, you know, we get the heat from the sun, we get the coolness from the moon. And then our next metal, mercury. Mercury is associated with the planet Mercury and associated with Wednesdays, thought of as like a big sort of messenger archetype, again, from like the god Mercury, associated with the third or with the throat chakra. So, you know, when you think of communication, you think of the messenger Mercury, that god, and some metaphysical and healing associations with Mercury, circulation, again, communication, life cycle, growth, seeking patterns and making connections. And then our next metal is copper, which is associated with the planet Venus. And the day Friday, copper is thought to be feminine, associated with the heart chakra and creativity and compassion and working with the senses and improving circulation is something that's kind of a classic association with copper. We think of the connectivity with copper wire. And then iron. Iron is associated with the planet Mars. Day Tuesday is thought to be masculine as well. Solar plexus is associated with iron. So action, will, strength, determination are some ideas associated with iron. Iron is kind of a funny one too, you know, because there's a lot of, with each of these metals, there's a lot of folklore and legends that go with them as well. Iron, just what comes to mind for me is that idea that it was always, you know, there's in the lore, they talk about using iron to protect from fairies, you know. So back in the day when people were worried about fairies snatching their children and exchanging them for a changeling, they would have iron bed frames on children's beds because it was thought to, like, you know, keep away the fairies magically. Iron is thought of a great metal to use for warding off anything, really. And the being associated with that solar plexus, again, you know, action, will, strength, determination. You know, we think of iron as something really strong. I grew up around Pittsburgh, Iron City. And the next classical metal associated with our planets is tin. It's associated with Jupiter, and the day of the week is Thursday. Connected to the sacral chakra, connected to thoughts and wisdom and abundance. And our last metal, our classic metal, is lead, which is associated with Saturn, Saturdays, the root chakra, transition, self-control, stability, all these ideas that come up along with these metals, classic ideas of what we associate with the chakras as well. So that's one way to look at it. You know, that's one way to consider metals. I mean, the information on metals is just, again, exhaustive, extensive, so much. You know, even metals that weren't known to our ancients, you know, like titanium. Titanium now is associated with power and purity and being a catalyst for positive change and repelling negative energy. And titanium, you know, you can find that in, like, rutilated quartz, little rutile pieces that you see inside the quartz, and also stones that have asterisms, like your star sapphires and your star rubies, etc. And it's also in the metal coating found in rainbow flame and or titan ore quartzes. There's also aluminum. You know, it has meanings associated with it as well, zinc, platinum, aluminum, self-understanding, reflection, platinum, meditation, finding one's true direction. Even newer metals that we don't normally think about, like tungsten. You know, tungsten is something that has become, tungsten carbide wedding bands is something that's become really popular because they're lighter weight, they don't scratch and you know, get all yucky looking as much, and they're stronger than gold, silver, and platinum even. And yet, you know, they can shatter. So tungsten, I don't know if anybody's really written much about, you know, what the metaphysical properties of that might be, but I think there's something about the strength and then also the ability to shatter, to break, that there's something in there. I haven't really thought. That just kind of popped into my head. So I don't have a big theory on it, but that just occurs to me that's kind of an interesting thing there. So, you know, there's a lot to consider when you think about metals and the metals that you might use in your jewelry or to work with in a, you know, magical way. So I think, you know, if nothing else, it's like at least we can, you know, can consider some of those things. There's also like ancient symbols. For people that are really into symbols, you can look those up and you can see like the symbols. I think we're mostly familiar with the symbol for Mercury. I think everybody almost would recognize that. But the symbol for gold and copper and lead and tin, you know, they're just kind of interesting to look at, you know. And so, you know, just think about it. Think about it the next time that you're thinking of getting a new piece of jewelry and you're wondering like, okay, you know, what do I want here? What do I want this jewelry to do? Is it just decorative? Is it ornamental? And you're not really looking for any of the metaphysical properties. There's nothing wrong with that either. Because like I always say, you know, with crystals, you don't have to believe in them for them to be beneficial to you, to wearing them or having them around in your house. And look, you know, I'm just lightly touching on this, talking about the classical associations with the seven planets, with these, you know, seven metals that were known to the ancient world on which our civilization was built, really, these metals. But it goes much further. There's astrological associations, like gold is associated with the planet Leo. Again, that's solar energy. You know, and of course, you know, the elemental associations, gold is associated with fire. You think of the heat of the sun, you think of that fiery kind of look of shiny gold. And they also have, you know, people have assigned number associations with them too, numerological vibrations. For example, gold is thought to have a vibration of 2. And we see that, you know, sometimes I think gosh, I want to say Melody, who wrote the classic Love is in the Earth tome on crystals. I think, I don't know if she was the first one to do it, but definitely, for me, that was the first time I was introduced into number associations with crystals, and I just always found that fascinating. So people that are into numerology, that's another way to work with crystals and metals, and also, you know, magically, like considering the number vibration of the stone or metal you're working with as well. And I guess, you know, just sticking with those seven classic ones, silver has a number vibration of 4, astrologically associated with Cancer and Aquarius, elementally associated with water. So all of those associations, again, are going to inform the ideas of, like, what this might be doing, how we might be working with this. You know, is it supportive of our emotional state? Is it going to be good for dream work, silver, right? Because it has the association with the moon and the element of water. And let's see, I did gold, I did silver, copper. Copper has a number vibration of 1. Astrologically associated with Taurus and Sagittarius, elementally associated with water. And just to, might as well do them all right. And even one thing I did want to mention is even like steel, you know, being from the steel city, you know, I thought about that and was able to find someone who said that steel had a number vibration of 7 associated with Aries, the planet Mars, the element of fire, healing powers that, you know, help prevent nightmares and has it very protective and activating the solar plexus. So there is so much, fascinating information out there. And it comes from like all over the world. You know, a lot of ancient cultures, a lot of different kind of cultures. It's Ayurvedic meanings and associations with the different metals as well. You know, steel is one that I also think of, you know, I think they, you know, steel is known for being self-healing, so that might be also something to think about, you know, stainless steel. All of these things, it's a huge, huge world of associations and meanings with these different metals, and some of them very ancient, and some of them, you know, like I said, with our newer metals, you know, some of them are quite modern as well, you know, and the I think a good rule of thumb also is that very rarely, right, do we get a piece of pure metal. You know, there's always like alloys and stuff mixed into them and stuff. And so that's also something else to think about when you're thinking about metals. And then beyond that, not just thinking about the metals and what they might be mixed with, right? Because you want to look at that, you know, for example, like something like brass, right? Brass is something that, you know, it's cheap, you know, to get something made of brass usually. It goes way, way back. Brass is a combination of zinc and copper, right? So it would, you know, combine the properties associated with both of those. The same with bronze. Bronze is an alloy of copper and tin. So again, you would combine the properties of both of those metals. You know, it's really kind of fascinating. And not only that, you know, I talked about rutilated quartz, right? Well, you know, we have a ton of crystals that have metal in them, or associated with them, or found with metals, or influenced by metals. When you look at toxicity lists, right, for you know, different crystals, which you should always do. You know, if you are going crystal shopping and you want a new stone, and you want to know, like, okay, is this toxic or not? Should I be handling a lot? handling it a lot or not. You know, I can think of, you know, there's a ton, like, okay, so like malachite. Malachite, you know, is everywhere. You see a lot of malachite, that beautiful green stripy stone. And in its polished form, it's fine to get it in jewelry and handle it and everything, but you don't necessarily want to handle it so much in its raw form, right? So why is that, right? And what is it that makes it toxic in a sense? And for malachite, the toxicity comes from copper, you know. So a lot of this stuff in its rare form, yeah, you don't want to have it all over. You know, we talk about things, some people have allergies to metals, right, or certain metals at least, or some people it seems to be all metals. And, you know, we talk about, you know, we don't want lead in our paint, right, you know, because that's toxic. Or in our water, heavy metals in our soil or our water supply can be toxic. So, you know, you got to use your common sense when dealing with all of these things. I know, you know, handling some of these stones, and a lot of stones do, you know, the toxicity comes from like metal inclusions or that kind of thing. You know, in their polished form, most of these stones are perfectly safe to handle and use in crystal healing and everything. The only aspect of it that I would always advise caution on is if you're somebody who is interested in or likes to make crystal elixirs, right? And so that's like when you take like a fluid, like water, and soak your crystal in it and then drink the water, right? You know, that's something that I feel like it comes in and out of popularity, right? And I always, 100%, you know, when I even talk about elixirs with anybody, I get asked every once in a while. It's like I always recommend what they call the indirect method, right? So that would be like taking your stone. Like say you want to make a crystal elixir with you know, something that's known as toxic like malachite. Even if you have a polished piece of malachite, what I recommend is taking that and putting it in a little bowl, right? A little teeny bowl, maybe, you know, something small, and putting that into a bigger bowl of water so that the metal never touches the water. That's why we call it the indirect method. You know, you can ask Judy Hall and some of the experts. I'll tell you that the elixir will be just as effective using the indirect method, because ultimately, doesn't this always boil down to intention? So if we're focused on our intention to make a healing elixir with this crystal, the crystal doesn't have to be soaking in the water that we drink and, you know, possibly poisoning us. We don't want that, right? But that you want the great, you know, properties of it, the metaphysical properties of it, the intangibles, right? The intangible benefits in a sense. You know, and those intangible benefits often, you know, I find to be quite tangible in the results. So it's just something to think about, and always, you know, we got to, you know, keep our wits about us when we're doing this and not do things that could be potentially harmful to ourselves, right? Okay. So, well, I've been yapping about metals for quite a while. Like I said, you know, this is just the tip of the iceberg. It really is. There's so much more. The history, the folklore, the legends that go back centuries and centuries and centuries across so many cultures, across so many geographications, all the way back to our earliest historical records, really. And so, you know, if there's a particular metal you're really, you know, crazy about, you know, Google it, look it up, look for like some of those ancient associations and how what it meant back then and how that has developed through the years. You know, it's a very fascinating thing to look at. Meanwhile, we're halfway through the show already, so it's time for me to talk about what is coming up on the Psychic Talk Network. And our shows this week on Psychic Talk Radio, pretty exciting. Our next show is going to be on Monday, June 7th, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. It's the Wisdom of the Soul show with your host, Janice Fuchs. And the next show after that will be on Friday. The Doctors Are In show with hosts Dr. Rose Wilkerson and Dr. Dax Carlisle. And they're going to be doing open lines, life coaching, and tarot mini readings all show long. And that, again, is going to be at 11 a.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. And then also on Friday, we've got our host Catherine Hahn back with her Compassionate Light Healing and Guidance Hour. This is going to be an episode airing at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Friday called the Spiritual Guidance Radio. It's a new day, new time for Catherine, and her episode is going to be about trusting yourself, and she's going to be giving free on-air guidance. So this is now Spiritual Guidance Radio. It's a new show title, but the same great host, Catherine. And so everybody check that out. That's going to be exciting. And then, of course, I will be back next Saturday, June 12th, regular time, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, with us for the Tarot Today radio show with my co-host, Dr. Dax Carlisle. We'll, of course, be doing open lines and tarot mini readings, but the exciting thing is that our topic is the best ways to learn tarot with our very special guest, Gary Karp. And for those of you that have been listening to the network for a really, really long time, you probably remember Gary Karp. He's always awesome to talk to. It's going to be a really great treat, I think, for listeners and for me and Dax as well. So, and then next Sunday, June 13th, the Magic Universe Show with your host, Sharona Rapsik, she's going to be chatting with Bruja Lily Tarot and doing free tarot mini readings and open lines as well. So that's the whole lineup coming up. Some really cool stuff on the Psychic Talk Radio Network. You can find that full listing of our upcoming shows by going to psychictalk.net/upcoming. Okay. So why don't we go ahead and take a call here before we start talking about hematite, our featured stone for this month. But let's go ahead and take a call first, and let's see who has been waiting the longest. And there's no area code on this. This is whoever may be calling in on Skype. It's just a bunch of ones. Let me see if I can bring, I'm trying to bring you on, caller. Are you there? Can't tell for some reason. My switchboard seems sort of frozen. Okay, bear with me, people, while we're having technical difficulty. I think I've got them on. Caller, are you there? 11111. Are you calling in on Skype? Hello, caller. You're on the air. Hello. I can kind of hear some noise on the other line. Hello, caller. Are you there? No, for some reason. I don't know. Maybe they've stepped away from their phone. Hello. All right. On hold. I don't know why switchboard seems to be frozen. We'll try it one more time. Hello, caller, are you there? Hello. I don't have an area code. I just have a bunch of ones for this person. Are you calling on Skype? Hello? No. All right. I am going to... I'm going to put them back on hold. I don't know what is going on with the switchboard. We'll try again later, and let's go ahead and talk about... Boy, this show's going really fast today, isn't it? Let's go ahead and talk about our featured stone for this week, hematite. Oh, now, hematite is something that is readily available. You can find it practically in any crystal shop or rock store that you may go to. Really easy to find. And I'm sorry, I am looking at the chat room. For that caller, since the switchboard might be frozen or something, you can also go to psychictalk.net/chat or our Facebook post here and post your question in there if you had a question. I'm looking in the chat room now. I see Dax, I see Sharona. Hello, everybody. Hello. Dax says his mind is blown. Didn't know about crystals having number vibrations. You know, I should have mentioned that to Dax. That's something I should have told you about a long time ago, my friend. Sorry about that. I just thought, he would care about that. Hello. He's like the numbers man. Dax has your number. I think that used to be a show that we used to do called Dax Has Your Number. Anyways, moving on. So I'm wearing hematite right now. It's cheap. You can find it everywhere. You can get a piece for $1 or something, right? With inflation, if we have inflation, $1.50. I don't think it's ever going to become totally crazy expensive, you know. Larger pieces that are carved into something really awesome, yeah, you know, that's going to be a little more expensive. But otherwise, it's pretty abundant. It's very common. You can find it, you know, so many places, you know, in the world. And like I said, you know, it's a form of iron oxide, you know. So let's talk about it as a crystal, right? The crystal system of hematite, the structure of it is hexagonal, okay? It has what it calls platy crystals. Chemical composition, of course, is iron oxide. Kind of it's a black-gray color. You might see a brown-red color on the Mohs scale of hardness. It's about a 5.5 to 6.5. No cleavage. It can have a blood-red streak to it. Can be fibrous as far as its fracture. So basically, usually what you see it is a dark gray to sort of black looking. That's one of the most common minerals, and usually is formed in association with deposits. The metallic luster led to its proper association with iron from ancient times. And it gets kind of tricky, right? You know, when we talk about the jewelry industry or trade, things always get tricky. Faceted black hematite has been sold as black diamond, right? And in the form of a bead is offered as black pearl, okay? That's misleading. I think it's been considered misleading even in the jewelry trade for decades, right? You know, you label something as black diamond, right? And it's actually hematite. And then you charge more for it because you're using the word diamond and making people think that it is some form of diamond. It's the same thing with the beads sold as black pearls. So that is something to sort of think about, okay? You know, if you see something that is called a diamond or a pearl, you know, you want to make sure it's actually a diamond or a pearl, and it can, you know, there's ways of testing for that. Hematite, again, let's get back to that reddish streak, right, because it's really interesting, right? When it's rubbed against what they call a touchstone, that's how it came to its name. It's derived from the Greek word haema, right, meaning blood or blood-like. It's also known as the stone which bleeds. Right? That's, again, an ancient, nickname for it because of that red streak, and they named it after blood, essentially. So, you know, that all those reasons and the fact that it is an iron ore caused the Greeks to associate it with Mars, the god of war. You know, moistened and rubbed on the body, its bloody residue was considered a valuable safeguard to warriors on the battlefield. So they would get to, you know, paint their bodies with hematite to get those red kind of streaks on there when they were going to war. There's an epic Greek myth, Lithica, right, where they talk about the stone originating from the petrified spilled blood of Uranus when he was wounded by Kronos. You know, so it goes way, way back. You know, we have a Babylonian author, Aeschylus, right, who wrote about hematite in a first century treatise composed for Mithridate the Great, the king of Pontus, a renowned lover of precious stones, and he postulated that human destinies were greatly influenced by gemstones, and that one who wears hematite will be successful in petitions to the king and victorious in lawsuits and legal judgments. That's basically, all of that is the foundation of the use of hematite signet rings as a favorite jewelry of the legal profession, okay? That's something, you know, a lot of this stuff that went on for centuries and centuries, you know, so sometimes we see glimmers of it today. As far as, you know, signet rings worn by lawyers made of hematite, you know, we probably didn't see that. We don't see that now. You know, I don't think that I've ever seen that. And I've worked for a lot of lawyers. I have a lot of friends that are lawyers, oddly enough. But, you know, definitely that's something that went on for centuries and centuries. But the fact that hematite was held in such high regard by ancient people, it isn't just about the Greeks and the Babylonians and, you know, the Western civilizations growing from that. But you can also see it in Pueblo inlays. Difficult, you know, to fashion hematite, you know, using those, you know, primitive tools way back when, and then something that would splinter and fracture easily. We talked about its fracturing. But, you know, they have found it in these delicate inlays, like interspersed with, like, turquoise, that kind of show that because it was so, you know, you could easily mess it up working with, like, you know, those basic tools. You had to really value it in order to include it, right? So it was valued, you know, even by, you know, Native Americans here, you know, on the continent of North America. And even the idea of curative powers, healing powers with the stone was something thought of by a lot of ancient cultures. You know, there are many claims made for this that do have a basis in fact. This dense iron oxide has a strong astringent and styptic properties. Hematite powder will act quickly to coagulate blood and remove other fluids from a wound. The ancient Egyptians prescribed it as an ingredient in dressings for wounds. The magical papyrus of Leiden contains a spell for the treatment of cuts and stings, where they, you know, you would recite the spell over a mixture of cat feces, hematite, goat fat, and honey, right? You don't have to do all that today, right? You know, you can just go to CVS and, you know, get, you know, all kinds of things for wounds and cuts. But it is kind of interesting. They didn't have a CVS back then in ancient Egypt, right? So, you know, they had to improvise. And hematite was something that they used. They would ground up the ingredients and place it in a bandage over the wound. They also used hematite as a treatment for diseases of the eyelids, styes, eye tumors. Hematite powder was dissolved in egg white to treat small growths. If the tumor was large, the same ingredients were to be boiled in water, which contained the herb fenugreek, you know. The treatment of mild inflammations involved making a thin solution of hematite powder and water, which was applied with a dropper. So, you know, there's all these incredible ways in which it was used. You know, the Romans even saw hematite as a class of five stones and not a single gem. And those five stones were given particular medical attributes. Pliny the Elder, right, documents each of these prescriptions by quoting somebody older than Pliny the Elder, you know, was using hematite, you know, only like five, they saw it as being like a class of five different stones. And that may be because of the differences that we talked about in the coloring of it. You know, some is like this dark gray kind of black, some is sort of brownish with a reddish streak. So you can kind of see why they would have kind of classified it as being actual different stones, even though it was essentially the same stone. Modern practitioners call hematite the stone of the mind, right? So in ancient times, the stone which bleeds, modern times, the stone of the mind, and said to help in modern times with mental acuity, memory enhancement, original thinking, technical knowledge, and it's still used in the treatment of anemia. Also has been helpful in the reduction of fever, applied to the forehead or taken as an elixir. We talked about elixirs earlier. Again, please use the indirect method because, again, this is an iron oxide, okay? Even if it's polished, I just think, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, as they say. People use it for leg cramps today, nervous disorders, insomnia, a lot of different blood disorders as well. So, you know, look, my actual very favorite thing to use hematite for personally is as a shield. I use it for psychic shielding, energy shielding. So, you know, and I think that this is something that is really useful if you are an empath, if you, you know, consider yourself an empath, you're picking up on other people's feelings, and sometimes maybe you have a hard time with it. Sometimes you can feel overwhelmed, like you feel like, whoa, you know, you go somewhere and there's a bunch of people and you feel overwhelmed by the energy of everybody, or you're talking with a group of people and all of a sudden, you know, you just start feeling different. It's like, I don't know, all of a sudden I was in a bad mood, or all of a sudden, you know, I didn't feel good. Now, a lot of times empaths can pick up things from other people that just don't belong to them, right? And it can be hard sometimes to figure out what's yours and what's theirs. And, you know, and just the idea, right, it feels like a violation that other people's energy, other people's vibe, other people's emotions can have an effect on you, right? So hematite is what I use to shield myself from that. And that's even like talking to people on the phone, right? It doesn't have to be you're in a loud crowd. You can pick up, you know, that vibration from other people and their energies and stuff. And the reason I think hematite is so effective for this, for shielding, for empaths, is because polished hematite has that shiny, it's almost like a mirror kind of effect to it. So you can think of it as like, okay, this is like a shiny metal shield, or it's like a mirror where, you know, whatever's coming at me is just going to like bounce off of that shiny metal, that shiny shield, and return, you know, the returning of that energy is kind of a whole other topic, isn't it? You know, there's a lot of, you know, but I got a few minutes here. I'm just going to say this real quick, and then I'll take a couple calls. There's something that's always kind of bothered me, right, about this sort of very common practice of whatever, you know, and I'm talking just, you know, metaphysically, you know, when we're thinking that way, we're working that way and stuff, metaphysically, so many people, you know, and it's common and there's nothing wrong with it, right? You know, people do it all the time. They've been doing it for decades at least, right? Where something negative is coming towards them and they want to bury it in the earth, you know? It's like, you know, please return that energy to the earth so that it can be purified and et cetera, you know. And, you know, look, the earth is very powerful. I don't have a, you know, I'm not going to dispute that, that, you know, that that probably works for people, right? But also, I feel like humans have done some real damage with the things we've put in the earth. I think of landfills, right? I think of, like, toxic waste. Look at the ocean with all the plastic floating around. And so for some peculiar, quirky reason, I have always taken an exception to the idea of taking any sort of negative energy and burying it in the earth, right? And, again, a lot of people do this. If you do that, that's fine. That's your thing. I believe in returning it to its source, okay? You know, and that's just me. You know, it's like, you know, let it just bounce off and return to its source without causing harm to anyone. And that's how I think of it when I'm wearing or working with hematite as a psychic shield. It's like, no, that's not mine. Send it back to where it belongs to without it causing, you know, harm in the sending back of it. But it's just not mine. It's theirs. And no, I'm not going to poison the earth with this poisonous energy. So that is just a strange, really weird tangent I just went off on. But I don't know. I felt the need to say it. But there you go. that's about, I think, all I want to talk about with hematite today, except that I also posted the card for hematite today. Great, again, you know, great. Great, great stone, cheap, easy to find. And the card of the day I posted, which you can find on our Psychic Talk Radio Network Facebook group. I post a card of the day in there every day. Today's card comes from the Crystal Reading Cards by Rochelle Sharman, with beautiful artwork by Shayote Carter. And I pulled on purpose, okay, it wasn't some big psychic moment. I literally pulled the hematite card from this deck, since that was our stone of the month. And the message with it is grounding. So yes, of course, it's a great stone for grounding as well. So beautiful picture of the card. Take a look at it. One thing that Rochelle says about hematite that I didn't mention that I do think is really lovely is the idea of encouraging gentle healing after a shock or trauma. And that's one of the uses she associates with hematite. And again, I think that also kind of, you know, connects to that idea that this is a good stone for empaths to carry, to wear, to have around. I don't do any sort of psychic work without it. You know, quite frankly, even tarot card readings, you know, if you get a reading from me, guaranteed I'm wearing a piece of hematite and not, you know, for any other reason than, you know, it's something I consider a necessity. All right, so before we go, let's try the phone lines again and see if the switchboard will be kind enough to let me take a call today. That would be great. And I'm going to try this one, code 806, caller, are you there? 860, rather. 860, caller, are you there? Oh, wow, I got somebody. How are you? What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, my name is Lisa. I'm calling from Connecticut.
Lisa from Connecticut. What do you want to talk about today, Lisa?
Well, I came in a little bit late, but I've been enjoying all the talk about hematite. Which I've always said hematite, And how does it work to ask you a question? Tell me a stone for an answer, a crystal for an answer? Is that how it works?
Yeah. The mini readings, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, you just ask your question, and I roll my crystal dice, and we'll see what happens.
Okay, well, I'm wanting to write a book, and I'm not sure quite about what. I've been thinking about a few things for years, and I'm not sure quite how to go about it or which subjects I should approach. For this C English student, it's quite an undertaking.
Right. So, well, what was that last part? Is quite an undertaking. I didn't hear that.
For a C English student, as hard as I tried. And many days in English, my mother used to laugh at me and tell me I was just like my father. And I used to say, thank you.
Thank you. So you're wondering, like, what should I do? So you have a bunch of ideas. You're just not sure which one to go with.
Ideas. I have to write about the disease I have and how I've lived through it and all the things that have helped me, you know, herbs, vitamins, treatments, natural, everything that have helped me be alive still. And then I had a medical service dog that passed, but she brought me great gifts in my life. And so I thought about the stories, people I met, and the relationships I have because of her.
Wow. Okay, so let's look at this. Okay, so, you know, look, I feel like, you know, this is really about where do we start rather than which one do we do.
Okay.
I, you know, looking at the stones, you know, the number two, for one thing, is coming up a lot. So I feel like she should do them both. She should do them both, you know. And also, the interesting thing is twos are a number of partnership. Right? So that idea of that relationship with your service dog, right? That's one thing. The thing that is kind of fascinating to me is that when we look at what's the challenge to getting started here, I get black obsidian is the stone that comes up. So I think it might be good to kind of see, like, if you can really examine, like, what if any, type of fear you have around this idea. Now, fear is a very strong word, right? So by fear, I mean hesitancy. Like, what's holding you back from just, like, jumping in and doing it? What might be, like, a hidden emotion that needs to be released? You know, come to the surface to be released. That's what, you know, black obsidian is great about. And it's also, you know, black obsidian is kind of a fascinating stone when you think of, like, all the ideas associated with it. You know, this is volcanic glass. So, you know, turbulence, fiery, you know, grounding, transformation, transforming from that molten lava to that beautiful glass, volcanic glass that comes from it. And it's really saying, like, okay, you know, with all these twos that are coming up, it's like we need the balance. Now, the other thing as well is that big, like, why am I hesitating? You know, is it because, you know, I'm worried about, you know, what did you say about
lack
English?
Lack of skills, that's what.
Yeah. So that, okay, describing it as a lack of skills. Okay, you know, that's not something I would immediately say, like, you're fearful, but it's a confidence thing, right? It's a confidence thing.
Yeah.
Writing a story about your service dog, about the challenges you've had and how you've overcome them, I think that says an awful lot about somebody who isn't, you know, who isn't having a lack of skill, but somebody who really had an awful lot of confidence and a lot of courage. It takes a lot of courage to try natural remedies when you're faced with a difficult health crisis, right? You know, because look, our society in general is not encouraging us to do that. You know, it's encouraging us to listen to whatever a doctor says and take the pill, right? So if you can, if you can tap into that courage, that bravery, that confidence that allowed you to do that and channel that into writing, you know, the biggest challenge with writing is like not writing. It's just thinking about it. It's like, okay, you know, and sometimes we have to get really disciplined about it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter in the beginning, right, if everything's perfect. What matters is that we're actually getting in the habit of writing, that we're actually dedicating the time to writing, that we're saying like, okay, 30 minutes, this is my writing time, even if it's just like just the ideas bouncing around, even if you're just working on an outline or a structure and you feel like you're not really doing the meat and potatoes of it. Because, you know, when it comes to writing a book, you know, there's a large percentage of that that is going to be in the editing, right, and in the proofreading and in the expansion and all of that. But you got to start somewhere. You got to start getting in the habit of it. These twos that come up a lot, I don't think it's saying, like, write both books at the same time, but you could have, like, you know, a separate notebook or a separate file if you're doing it on your computer for each project and say, like, look, these are the two books I'm going to write, you know. Instead, get out of the mindset of, like, well, I want to or I think so or I have this idea or that idea. It's like, no, you know, I'm opening up a file, I'm creating a file, and I'm calling it, you know, my book about my service dog or my book about my health experience, you know, whatever you're going to call it. Sometimes just starting there and creating the file and then adding your notes, going back to it, adding the notes saying, okay, you know, I'm going to take 30 minutes a week to do this. Maybe I'm going to take an hour a day to do this. Maybe I'm going to take 2 hours a day to do this. You know, it's going to keep expanding and expanding and expanding. And next thing you know, you're like writing up a storm. And as far as, you know, your command of English and grammar and all of that, that's the easy stuff. That's the easy part, you know. But
that sounds so much easier.
You've already done the hard work. You've had the hard work of living through these experiences. That's what people are going to relate to. That's what they're going to want to hear about. They don't care if you use a bunch of 50-cent words. They're not going to care proofreading and all of that stuff is for. Get the bones of it. Get the idea. Tell us what, when, where, who, what happened. How did this happen? Where do you start? How this begun? You know, beginning, middle, and end. Right? That's a book. So break it down into more simple things. Tap into that inner strength and courage and confidence that got you through all of these experiences. And channel that into the concept of writing and don't feel like intimidated by the idea of writing a book. You can do this.
That is such amazing advice. Thank you so much. I guess my only experience with writing anything was getting the D on the paper, you know, and then
right.
You were alone. So I guess I didn't really understand or any of that stuff. I don't know anything. I have a book on the way about how to write a book.
Look, you know, so you got a D. Well, guess what? You're the one grading this. Okay?
Yes.
You're the one grading this right now.
Well, my grammar,
you know,
and my
later on,
that no matter what I
think,
my grammar spelling was what they graded you on. They didn't care what you had to say.
Exactly. And I'm not going to read a book because the person has good spelling and grammar. I expect the publisher and the editor to have taken care of that aspect. I want to hear what the writer has to say, what happened, how they deal with what happened to them. So
too,
you go for it.
Alone. That's amazing, amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
Thank you. Oh, you're
so
a good
thanks
coach.
So much for calling. thank you. I'm so glad that I was able to talk to you today. You have a great weekend, and you call back into the show and let me know how you're doing with this. I want to read these books.
Thank you so much for blessing me today. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Take care. Bye-bye. Okay. Well, we are already, oddly enough, maybe not so oddly because I've been yapping this whole time, we are already at the end of the show for today. I'll be back next Saturday with my lovely co-host, Dax Carlisle. And I hope you all have a fabulous weekend this weekend. If I didn't get to your call today, you can call in on Friday. I think is the next show that we're doing live call-ins, and of course next Saturday as well. Next Saturday is going to be so much fun with our guest on the Tarot Today show, Gary Karp. And that's it for me, and there's a rock for that, and I hope you all have an awesome weekend. Bye-bye, everybody. Oh, my God.